This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Do the Bears represent the biggest challenge Jared Goff and the Rams offense have faced to date? Does Mitch Trubisky have to outplay Goff for the Bears to win?
I think this is, the Bears, even though they are, fourth in yards and fourth in points, and I know the Rams have played some good teams, some good defensive teams, you know, when you talk about teams like the Chargers and the Vikings and Seattle's got a pretty good defense still. But nothing like what the Bears have, and the Bears are very good on defense, and they do so many things well. I think if you actually look at the Bears on defense, they intercept the ball very well. They do a good job of stripping the ball. There are a lot of there's a lot of reasons to like the Bears defense, and even though they don't lead the league in either yards or scoring, they're up there, and certainly, they're 11th in passing yards, but they have they've forced more mistakes than any team in the league. They lead the league with 21 interceptions, and opposing quarterbacks have a 78.5 passer rating against them, and that's tops in the league. So I think that the combination of their ability to attack the passer and their ability to make some big plays in the back end make them, I'm going to say that this is a challenge for the Rams as well as the Bears, and we'll learn more about the Rams as much as we'll learn about the Bears. Mitch needs to be Mitch. He just needs to play the way he's played when he's been good. He doesn't have to make a ton of big plays, but he has to be efficient, and he cannot turn the ball over. He has to hang on to the ball. He doesn't even, he just needs to be kind of good Mitch, right? I mean, not great, but good. As long as he does that, the defense and the weapons will take care of the rest.
I think these answers are tied together. When you have, if the Bears defense, which I think can be the most feared in the league when playing at up to its potential, and I think that they have an opportunity to do that on Sunday, then if the defense plays that well, it will be definitely the biggest challenge and the biggest impediment that the Rams have faced. And they could win this game if the Bears defense plays up to its capability and stops the run. I think it all starts with stopping Todd Gurley. So if that happens, Mitch Trubisky doesn't have to outplay Jared Goff, because Jared Goff will, he could have good statistical night, but be sacked five times and
turn the ball over.
Yeah. And, you could look at him throwing for 357 yards and going, 28 out of 37. And if the Bears sack him five times and get a strip sack fumble from Khalil Mack, they're in business. And that then all you need from Mitch Trubisky, as you point out, is to be good Mitch, is to be the guy that is, converting on third and four when coverage, looks like you're going to create a sack. He escapes the rush and keeps the chains moving. So he doesn't have to be great. He just has to be good. The defense, though, has to be great. And I think that's the bigger challenge, and that's the biggest challenge the Rams have faced this year.
I'll say no, it's the second biggest challenge. I think there's a lot of comps going to Mile High, very tough place to play. They have a strong defense and elite pass rusher there. Von Miller had a big game against the Rams. And even though this defense isn't as good as the Bears, anytime you go to, as Joe Fortenbaugh calls it, the Voodoo Dome, down the Superdome at the Saints, I know they're not as good as the Bears, but that's an intimidating place to play. And they were on the track, so they didn't have the disadvantage like they will this weekend. With the weathers, but anytime you go and face the Saints, I'll put that as the toughest challenge. But this one is right there. Does Mitch Trubisky have to outplay Goff for the Bears to win? Well, if he does, the Bears are winning. But he doesn't have to. The Rams defense can't stop the run at all. We know they have a leaky defense overall, but a lot of it stems from the run. They have that monster in the middle and Aaron Donald putting pressure on opposing quarterbacks consistently. But with the weather, Mitch coming back from the injury, the matchup, it sets up. It could be, if they want to stick with it, if they want to stick with the run game, it could be a big night for Jordan Howard. So I don't think that Trubisky has to outplay Goff. That's the only path to a victory for the Bears.
Hold on, Joe. Are you saying this is the Jordan Howard game?
If there's one, David, if there's going to be one, this is it.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be one, but I'm with you.
Every week.
It's not going to be one.
But this one is a little different.
That never happens.
It's right.
There was a half.
Oh, who could forget?
There was a half.
Going through the Rams results here, Joe, I do agree with you that the New Orleans Saints were probably the biggest test that the Los Angeles Rams offense faced this year, and they failed that test. They actually lost the game, their only loss of the season. But the Bears do take the ball away more than any other team in the NFL, and Jared Goff, for as excellent as he has been, and he is, he has given the ball away a little bit more than you might expect. He's given it away 10 times in 12 games this year, which shows that he's got the propensity to throw it to the other team or put it on the ground. I mean, three fumbles lost is certainly not something you'd like to see from your quarterback. So I think in that regard, the Bears can definitely take it away from him if he makes mistakes, if they're able to get to him through the Rams' offensive line. So there's definitely an ability there and a chance that they can really disrupt Jared Goff. I don't think Trubisky necessarily has to outplay Goff this Sunday night for the Bears to win. It would definitely help. It would be great for us and on the radio show in particular when people will call in and proclaim Mitch Trubisky to be the guy and an MVP candidate all of a sudden. If the Bears win on Sunday and he outplays Goff, I don't expect that to happen. It would be nice. And they don't necessarily need that to win because we don't know if he's going to be 100%. We don't know what the play calling is going to look like. We don't really know what anything is going to look like Sunday, which is one of the reasons that I'm looking forward to this game so much. So I think it's a big test for both teams, absolutely, but not the biggest that the Rams have faced yet because the Bears are comfortably, I think, a notch below the Saints and probably the Rams too.
Well, it's interesting when you say biggest challenge that Jared Goff and the Rams offense have faced. I mean, it was also a challenge because they couldn't stop the Chiefs, right? That they had to go back out and score every other time. So is that what it is? Is this the best defense they faced? I think it is the best defense that they're going to face. Yes, yes, I do. I do think it is the best defense. I do think that Mitchell Trubisky, Mully, to your point in the first segment of the show this morning, Mitchell Trubisky's got to be Mitchell Trubisky, and he's got to have a better game than Jared Goff. And this is something we haven't talked about, but Jared Goff splits home and road really is
30
something.
30 points worse than his passer rating on the road.
Right, and it's like 9 touchdowns to 5 interceptions on the road versus like 30-2 at home. So big difference. So,
and they're ripe for a loss if you really watch how they've been playing.
They are ripe for it. My
like
biggest
last
concern,
week,
though, my biggest concern, and I know that's not one of the questions today, it's the Bears haven't had to be that great at stopping the run. They've had some good goal line situations on third and short and fourth and goal where they've made some big plays, but they've also given up some big plays. You go back to the Lions game, you go back to the loss against the Giants. There have been some times when they've given up some big runs. I'm actually more worried about Todd Gurley having that running game on the road, cold weather, yada, yada, yada type of thing than I am necessarily a Jared Goff.
This segment brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter.
I figured that'd be a early question this morning.
Who will win the Bears-Rams game on Sunday night, and can you please predict a score?
Sure, I can do that. I don't look at this game as a referendum on the 2018 Bears. I don't look at it like they have to win this game. I think it's must-watch, not must-win. I think the Bears are going to struggle most probably stopping the run. I think the Todd Gurley is good. I don't know that he'll have a Derrick Henry kind of night against against the Bears. 238 yards. How
That's
about
good.
That?
That's pretty good.
I believe that the Rams are too deep and balanced, and I don't know that the Bears' offense is going to be able to function because of its offensive line weaknesses, and that is the weakest part of this team. So I think the Packers game actually is the one you can't lose. Sunday night is one you can. Rams 31, Bears 27.
Yeah, is that the over, right? I mean, it's pretty high total.
Oh, yeah.
I got to tell you, I really want to pick the Bears here. I think that LA is ripe for a loss. The Bears were ripe for a loss last week, and you saw it happen. But this is a game where I think the Bears are going to be ready to play. I really want to take the Bears. I'll take LA, 27-21.
Rams. All right.
I don't want to. I just feel compelled to.
That's a good pick. That's a good pick. Bears are a great home team again. They actually have been for a while.
Yep.
Last seven against winning teams at home. 6-0-1 against the spread. LA, 0-3-1 against winning teams against the spread this year. People are down on the Bears. It's a perfect bounce back spot. Bears are number one in the NFL at home in net yards per play, number one in the NFL in interceptions. They've scored 32.4 points per game their last five games. Jared Goff, career passer rating of 97. Fantastic. Nine games in December, passer rating of 76.6. While he's under pressure, he completes 40% of his passes, passer rating of 65. Bears 31, Rams 23.
Oh, wow.
What a homer you are, Joe.
My I usually pick
God.
Against them.
Yeah, all right.
No, I like that pick.
But you picked
hate it.
LA.
I didn't want to, though. As I said, I really wanted
but
to pick
them.
But
you were compelled to.
Well, I felt, yeah. I got to stick with what I said at the beginning of the year and how I viewed the game, and I'm not going to change it.
Sure, fair play. All week long.
Beginning of the year.
I'm saying
you
had
every game. I had this one circled on the calendar.
I can't remember the beginning of the show.
No, I'm saying I do take notes on everything, and I go back and look at them before I make my selections. And
meticulous.
There's
notes,
reasons
I
that
add.
I wanted to pick the Rams, and
I think I had 6-10 before the year.
What's interesting, Joe?
me too.
What was the Well, I'm talking about after the Mac trade. What
right.
was the What did you say that his passer rating was on the road?
For Goff?
Yes.
I gave nine games in December at 76.6.
Yeah.
And under pressure, 65.
92.8, by the way.
The Bears, 92.8 on the road. So the Bears hold teams, generally speaking, to 5 points below. They're 5 points better in passer rating than any other team in the league. So immediately subtract 5 from that. So if he's in the high 80s, say he's got an 87% passer
Gurley.
Rating. Does Mitch...
Gurley.
Better that? And if he does, is that what we're talking about?
And it's one game.
Yeah.
But the other game that was below freezing, it'll be below freezing on Sunday night against the Broncos. He was horrible.
It's interesting.
All week long, I was thinking that the Rams were going to win this game. And I thought that they were going to win pretty handily, actually. But as we've gotten closer and closer to the game, I'm starting to have doubt creep into my mind, or maybe it's optimism creeping into my mind. I'm not sure what's creeping into my mind right now. It's always something, but I'm not really sure exactly what it is at this exact moment. I think I'm going to pick the Bears, and I think I'm going to pick them in a relatively low-scoring game, and we haven't seen Los Angeles play in many low-scoring games this year, but I think, you know, the fact that it is a home game in Goff, while he's still solid away from Los Angeles, he's significantly below what he usually is. So I think they're going to be able to get to him. I think they're going to disrupt him. I think he's going to turn the ball over a couple times. I think the Bears win a shockingly low-scoring game. I think they're going to hold the Rams to about 17 points on Sunday. I think the Bears win 21-17.
Well, if they only score 17 points, then the Bears are definitely going to win the ball game. And just, Kevin, I don't know if you've heard the same, but you know what rolls downhill, and that's probably what's seeping into your ears. I never want to be wrong. No. I think that the Goff thing, the splits on Goff is what gives you hope, Bears fans. But I see this 30-20 Rams.
I feel a lot better about picking the Bears now after hearing you say that.
Almost any answer to any question sounds like an excuse.
How do you feel about Joe Maddon's new staff, and how many of them have a chance to outlast him?
That's the weird thing about it, is I think when we look at the staff, they've got a lot of guys that kind of were picked by management and were guys that, you know, how are we pronouncing his name?
Hadavi. Right?
Yes.
I didn't know it was Hodavi or Hadavi, and Hoda is on with Kathy.
No,
I
not her.
Confused.
No,
drinking
not her.
Today.
Yeah, yeah, it's wine. They start shugging down wine.
I love that
on a
segment.
Friday.
Yeah.
At any rate, I
how do you know that?
Well, because I have a wife and I have
okay.
children. At any rate,
yeah,
the girls aren't at home watching it. Maybe in the summer,
they're
but
truant.
Normally, they're at school at this time. No, we're going to stay home and watch the wine drinkers. Fair enough. Go in
Sorry.
Late.
Tommy Hadavi.
Yes. I just think that, you know, who's more likely to be back? It's just such a weird thing. And this is the year of reckoning. And this is Joe has, you know, there's a shot across the bow here with him. And his son's not happy about it, which means I'm guessing that others aren't happy about it. His agent didn't think it was a big deal, but he can't be happy about it. So I think Joe could be done after this year. I mean, unless they win the World Series. And I think these guys are, some of them will stick around. So, yeah, I'm going to say that Joe could be outlived by his assistants. And that's, you know, kind of weird, but I'm not sure he's the one picking him anymore.
Exactly. I mean, the question says, how do you feel about Joe Maddon's new staff? Who says it's Joe Maddon's staff?
Yes.
This is Theo Epstein's staff. This is Jed Hoyer's staff. This is the Cubs front office staff. I don't know that the connections to Joe Maddon from Tommy Hadavi or from Anthony Iaposi are discernible. These aren't Joe guys. Last year was a different story. Last year when you welcomed Chili Davis to show all these millennials how not to hit, and you had obviously Jim Hickey, longtime friend of Joe Maddon, that was Joe Madden's staff. This is not. This is a weird offseason so far for the Cubs. They can change a lot of minds and perceptions by going into the winter meetings and making a smart trade or a smart signing. And I think everyone should have confidence that Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer will do something just like that. But so far, head scratchers galore. When you asked how many of those new hires have a chance to outlast Joe, as you point out, Molly, all of them, because this is headed down the wrong direction if you're a Joe Maddon fan.
Yeah, this is not Madden's coaching staff at all. This is Theo's coaching staff. The Hadavi promotion was interesting because he has a very good relationship with players like Kyle Hendricks. They study a lot of the metrics together. We don't know anything. I'm shocked at this point. December 7th, we don't know what happened to Jim Hickey at all. At least not the details. We have our own ideas of what happened, but we haven't heard them talk about it. It doesn't sound like they have any need to or want to, really. Which members of this coaching staff are Joe's guys at this point? There's been so much turnover. I know he has a great relationship. He always talks about Borzello.
But Lester Strode.
He's been there for 100 years.
He was there with Herman Franks, wasn't he?
He's still Joe's guy, though. They drink wine together.
Hyde is his guy, right? As long as he stays.
Hyde, yeah.
Mm-hmm. As long as he doesn't get another job. This kind of reminds me of The Office. It's like Milton getting moved to the basement. It's like Joe's the last guy standing here. They might all stay after Joe is gone next season.
I think that the pattern that the Cubs have shown over the last couple of years with their hitting coach and their pitching coach has been one of very little patience, very little regard for, you know, holding up pleasantries, I guess you could say, or being eloquent about it. If they don't like what's going on, they will not hesitate to get rid of a hitting coach or a pitching coach. And we've seen that. I think we're likely to see it again. I mean, we're so far away from the season here, still about, what, 2.5 months until pitchers and catchers even report to spring training. So we don't know what the roster is going to look like. We don't know how guys like John Lester and Cole Hamels will perform as they get into that golden period of their careers, I guess you could say, if you want to dress it up a little bit. But we all obviously think that Joe is going to be gone next season, barring a World Series victory. That seems like the only thing that's going to save his job, and that's really hard to predict, this team's going to win the World Series this year. I mean, there are so many teams, and so many of them are getting better, too. along with the ones that were already in the playoffs last year. So it's really tough to say, okay, they're going to win the World Series or they're one of the favorites even at this point. So I'm going to say that these guys are all going to be one and done. So we're going to be looking for a new pitching coach to bring on the program probably again next year.
Wow. Yeah, I think this is Theo's group. I don't think it's Madden's group. I think I still, you know, there's lots of speculation that something – it's been too quiet over there at Wrigley, right? This offseason, and not a lot of news has leaked out. This Morrow thing yesterday, not the biggest news in the world, but it's still news. He's still your closer for a team that's supposed to compete. I still wouldn't be surprised if Joe Maddon's not the manager of this team when they break camp. I would not, that would not knock my socks off. So, yes, I do believe that this group of guys that Theo has assembled and elevated will outlast Joe Maddon.
Good question, Joe.
Theo Epstein reiterated the Cubs will have to improve from within. Epstein also revealed closer Brandon Morrow has surgery, likely to keep him out till May. If this is indeed a year of reckoning, as Theo said, shouldn't the front office feel urgency as well?
Well, I think absolutely. I don't know that urgency is reflected in talking to Joakim Soria about becoming your next closer. Nice signing, good supplemental depth. I don't know that you feel good about your season. It changes your perspective if he becomes your closer. They got some work to do, whether it's through free agency, whether it's through the creative trade process. They've got some work to do. And I think that you hear yesterday, unless he's laying in the weeds, unless he's playing a good hand of poker, Theo Epstein did not sound like somebody who's going to the winter meetings with the intention of making a blockbuster announcement that, okay, Bryce Harper, after you get done watching the Las Vegas Golden Knights with your buddy Chris Bryant, you're going to sign a contract with the Cubs. I don't see that happening. I think yesterday we heard more reasons not to think that that was going to happen. So the urgency is there for Joe Maddon. The urgency is there for the players who, apparently are having a great offseason and going to come back with an edge. But I think that there's some urgency, too, to remind everybody how smart this front office is. And the improvement from within idea sounds good. You can defend it. You can justify it. It's rational. But I don't know that it's going to make people feel better. It's not going to instill a whole lot of optimism with Cubs fans because this is a team that since they lost game 163 has been nothing but kind of news that is discouraging.
Well, reckoning to me, it means someone is standing in judgment. It means that someone is doing the accounting and ready to give you the bill, and you're going to have to face that. I think these are the guys that stand in judgment. I think these are the guys that are computing the bill, and these are the guys that are going to make all the calculations and settle all accounts. So, I think the year of reckoning is not involving the front office. I think that Theo should be in a job for life. I don't know how long he wants to do it, but he should be allowed to do it for as long as he wants to do it. And I think that he should be allowed to make any changes that he deems necessary, any calculations that he wants to make. So I'm not going to include the front office. I'm going to say that the year of reckoning isn't about the front office. It's about the urgency on the field.
Lifetime pass?
It's about, for me, yes. It's about the manager and it's about the players. And I think what we're missing here is the players. I think that they're going to make judgments differently after this upcoming season about who they keep and who they pay and who's a part of this thing moving forward. And that's going to be the changes that come. I don't necessarily think that when he says year of reckoning, he's talking about Joe. I think Joe is included in it, but I think it's all of these players that we haven't seen
agree with that. I think that we're jumping with this year of reckoning,
yes,
and saying, okay, it's Joe Maddon,
yeah,
and we're connecting the dots previously.
Not.
I think
yes.
He was referring to, in that context,
yeah, I do believe that.
The players who have underachieved.
100%. Joe's going to catch all the heat this year. We know it's the final year of his contract, and he's probably on his way out the door to somewhere else. But it's really about the players. That's exactly what Theo was talking about. And he was also saying that we believe in this roster that we put together, that we won a championship with. He said that the offense is broken, but what he meant is these guys can get it back. They can turn it around. They can fix. They're trying to fix things. That's why they're bringing in all of these new coaches. As far as a lot of the position players, and the starting rotation. I know some of the top guys we talk about, you add them to your team no matter what if you're able to, but the position players are pretty much set. The bullpen, they have a lot of work to do on this bullpen. I don't have any trust in how it's currently put together here, but 100%, that was about the players. This is a front office that has been very urgent since they've arrived, and the roster's pretty deep.
Yeah, I'm with you on the bullpen, Joe. I mean, the Morrow injury is expected, but it's terrifying if you're a Cubs fan. You still not sure with Carl Edwards Jr. which direction he's headed in. They let Jesse Chavez sign with Texas. So that leaves you with who as your late game options here. And Joe, you know, loves going to the bullpen as early as possible. And that's kind of one of the reasons that the bullpen wore out so much last year. And I think that's one of the biggest priorities that Theo and Jed have to address here in the offseason. But they keep talking about how, you know, they're not going to be able to break the bank. They have to be creative. They have to find other ways to fill gaps within the team. And it makes me think that maybe a trade would be more likely than a marquee free agent signing or a couple of big free agent signings in the bullpen and some of the other needs that they have. So that's going to be really interesting to monitor. Of course, there's urgency with Theo. I mean, he's always going to want to win and build the best team possible. He's as competitive as anybody. But I feel like it's different because, you know, for better or worse, managers in baseball are pretty much expendable. You can get another one, and it's not going to really cost your team over the course of a season. But if you get rid of Theo Epstein, I mean, that's kind of setting the clock back on your franchise several years. You don't want to be the guy that fired Theo Epstein and let him go elsewhere and win a world championship, because that's probably what he would do if he ever left the Cubs. It's what he did when he left Boston. So, you know, I think a trade might be on the horizon here for the Cubs. I think they're going to have to be creative, and luckily they have perhaps the brightest guy around to be able to construct that trade.
I don't want Theo to go anywhere, but, I mean, the Red Sox have rebounded nicely, right, from him not being
second
there.
Highest payroll of all time.
So they bought it. Yeah. That's essentially. All it was. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, they also bought it the first time. I mean,
Chris Sale trade.
No, they cheated the first time.
Well, I think this time they bought supplements.
Yeah. And checkbook.
Chris Sale was pretty cheap.
Ketchup in the sock and all that.
Theo drafting
ketchup
Mookie Betts.
Fried chicken beer.
Chris Sale cost
sock.
Him $50 million in Mancata money.
Oh, Jesus.
But to answer the question, I think Theo believes, and I do believe this too, I don't think collectively the core of this team could collectively have as bad of a year as they had last year, and they still won 90-plus games this coming year. So, and also, all these guys are what? They all want to get what? They all want to get paid. So if they don't perform on the field, these cheap young Cubs are not going to become rich old Cubs. They're going to become rich somewhere else, but it won't be with the Cubs. So it's a big year for everybody over at Clark and Addison.
This is a big question, okay? You ready for that?
I'll let you know if it's big.
Will the White Sox make any news at the MLB meetings in Las Vegas? Should they wait to be rejected by big-name free agents or start making moves to improve?
They are obviously looking long-term, and they are concerned about getting, you know, young and super talented players. They're willing to pay through the nose for youth, even in its prime, because they know that what they have is coming. It's not coming this year. It's probably coming in 2020. Maybe it's never going to arrive. I don't know. But it doesn't seem like they're going to make any moves in terms of short-term, get-rich-quick type schemes. That's not what they're into. They're playing the long game. They're interested in a long-term investment. They're willing to make it with a 26-year-old, 27-year-old Hall of Fame candidate, but I don't think they're willing to make it with just anyone, and they're not looking to just improve. So I'm going to go with they don't do anything, because some people keep saying that Harper will indeed make a decision this week because it's Vegas and he's in Vegas. I think he's going to wait a while. I think it's going to take a little time.
I heard Rick Hahn say we can't control when certain talents become available, and I think that kind of piqued the curiosity and reminded people who are Sox fans that, boy, this is a big offseason, and they're going to try to pounce when the opportunity is there. That means Machado. That means Bryce Harper. That means they're all in on every possibility that you would hope that they're going to be all in on. this, the wording of this question made me kind of chuckle, only because it had to have been constructed by a Sox fan who's been spurned before. Should they wait to be rejected by big-name free agents? Like, okay, there's no expectation. There's very little expectation or hope that they're going to come through with this. So this is sounds like there's kind of leading, creating this sort of false hope and optimism. But, hey, if they pull it off, it'd be the story of the offseason in Chicago baseball. I am skeptical that they can pull it off, but I think that they have to try. And, you know, if not, then yeah, they have money to spend. I don't think they're going to spend it foolishly, but I think their odds of getting the kind of generational talent that they need right now or want right now, pretty slim.
Yeah, since it's not news when John Heyman or Ken Rosenthal tweet about rumors involving the White Sox, because we're going to see that a lot next week because we've already seen it a whole bunch. No, I'm not expecting any news out of Las Vegas involving the White Sox, and they should wait. So far, there's been very little action. Nathan Eovaldi re-signs with the team that he was traded to.
This all happened because Ken Rosenstein wrote an article.
Thank you, Alan. And you have the big Patrick Corbin contract, and really, that's it. So I start there, and I wait till I get a big no from the big-name free agents, and then you move on.
Chicago Wolves, Friday fun fact. The Chicago Wolves currently have 3 NHL first round and 3 NHL second round draft choices on their roster. Celebrate the Wolves' 25th season with free parking courtesy of Kia. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. I never expected Bryce Harper or Manny Machado to come to the White Sox. I think that was always very far-fetched given the fact that, sure, they want to get rich, but I'm sure they don't want to lose 90 or 100 games the first couple of years they're here, too. And that's kind of being generous. Maybe it's only going to be a couple more years of losing before this thing starts to turn around. And I don't think that they want that. As much as they want that $30 million a year or whatever the estimate is, I think they do have to weigh both sides of the coin there. So, you know, they're going to sign somebody. They have to. You're getting rid of players here for nothing. You're non-tendering Avi Garcia and Matt Davidson. Either one of those guys aren't exactly all-stars, but those were major league players, and you need to fill those spots with major league players going forward. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, Michael Brantley or A.J. Pollock or Andrew McCutchen, which would be a very White Sox-y signing. I don't know who it's going to be, but they're going to have to do something, even if it's not one of these big-ticket $300 million contracts that everybody wants to see. They have to fill these spots with major league players.
But they have to finish second in those in order to get to filling it.
Well, yeah, I mean that's just.
Are they going to finish second in, or third maybe in all these? Is that what we're staring down here?
That'd be a nice consolation for you. Big, oh, we're so no. The White Sox were just missed out on Manny Machado.
Well, they clearly have to field the team, right? It's just that it's going to be, is it going to be a middle of a road? I mean, they're going to.
Did you watch last year?
Well, I mean, they played with 9, right? When they went out there.
And they never quit.
And they don't quit. Don't stop now.
Sometimes you couldn't tell that there were 9 out there.
All right. I mean, they got a guy named after a fruit that playing the famous fruit company playing corner outfield spots. I mean, come on, Mickey.
Leave him alone. Oh, okay. It's a steak, by the way.
Listen, we're going to find out. You know, we had Dan O'Dowd on the program the other day. He was really great.
Yep.
Great stuff. What did he tell us? Years and length and money. You know, money and years. Money and years. Two things that the White Sox have. Money and years. So if that really is what's important, the White Sox have that to offer Harper or Machado. Mm-hmm. And guess what? The way I look at this free agent landscape right now, it looks like the obvious landing spots for these guys are drying up. I mean, to me, it looks like Harper's going back to Washington. That's what seems to make the most amount of sense.
Did they give his money to Corbin?
Well, that's what I mean. But that's my point. I'm like, but wait a minute. Then they got Corbin. Oh, wait a minute. Machado's going to Philadelphia. Oh, but wait a minute. They just made a deal with the Seattle Mariners.
What about
right?
the Giants?
So all of a sudden, yeah, I guess the Giants have been pretty quiet, right? If they get rid of Bumgarner.
Philly, yeah.
Dodgers are always an option.
Dodgers, Magic Johnson.
We talked about a trade. Maybe the Cubs are in the market to trade for. Maybe the Cubs are in a market to trade for that Giants pitcher.
Who are they trading?
Well, unfortunately, it could be my guy.
You, Darvish?
Schwarber.
Schwarbs.
For Jeff Samardzija?
Yeah, I was going to say, that'll get you Samardzija, maybe. That ain't getting you Madison Bumgarner.
That's the start of it.
Samardzija's the start?
What world do you live in?
This one, same one as you.
312-644-6767. That is the 5-5. What do you think? The Bears, are they the biggest challenge that Jared Goff and the Rams are going to face? And what does Mitch need to do in order to have them win? Who you taking in the game? Are you a Joe guy? Do you love the Bears this week? Are you waving your pom-poms? Or are you more of a realist? That was a shot, Joe. It's just out of fun. What do you think of Theo and the whole idea of a year of reckoning? And, of course, the White Sox, will they make any noise this week at the winter meetings? 312-644-6767. Mullion Hall on the score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.